or something else, and just so busy with his machine that he was unable to join us. So, but we now have a doctor, Dr. Philip Nietzsche, if I'm pronouncing that right, from hailing from Australia here in the United States. Doctor, good to have you on the show today.
Yes, good morning.
Where are you in the United States right now?
I'm in San Diego. I came here from Australia to talk to the conference of the Hemlock Society of America, and that conference ended yesterday. I spoke to the conference yesterday, and now I've got a few days in the U.S. before heading back to Australia.
Were you able to reconfigure your suicide machine?
No, we're not before the conference. I mean, it just simply didn't have the time after the customs department in Australia took it from me at Sydney Airport, so we've been building one since that time. We're just about finished the device now, but it wasn't available for the to give anyone a look at yesterday.
Well, I would think that a bottle of carbon monoxide and a gas mask with a feeder tube to it would be sufficient. I'm a little worried about your design here, saying it's just in the nostrils because somebody will open their mouth and then you might just brain damage them.
No, well, there's a few issues here. I mean, it's very hard to get hold of cylinders of carbon monoxide. They're difficult to obtain for assortment of reasons. So the generator actually makes the gas. It is true that we have it delivered through, as you say, a nasal tube as opposed to a face mask. But, I mean, two or three breaths of pure carbon monoxide delivered this way causes the death of a patient. So it's not as if it's easily dislodged, and it's not as if one is likely to in some way, during some protracted process, dislodges the tube.
What about just a cooler full of dry ice in a contained room? That'll do the job.
Dry ice, but that's carbon dioxide.
Yes.
We're talking carbon monoxide here.
Yes,
that's
I understand
quite a
carbon
difference.
Monoxide, yeah. But the dry ice will kill you too.
Well, carbon dioxide is a dreadful death. It's quite a different death from carbon monoxide. I guess, the physiology is quite different here.
Now, we know that in Europe they've been legalizing euthanasia. Doctor, what made you get into this line of work?
I was in the Northern Territory of Australia when the world's first law was passed there. It only lasted 8 months before the Australian federal government overturned it. But in that time, I was involved in getting the legislation passed, and four of my patients were legally able to receive lethal injection. People dying from cancer were able to elect to have an injection given to them, and I was involved in those four incidents, so I saw the advantages of having decent legislation, and I was appalled when it was overturned, and we're back in the jungle now.
Really? Well, why have they changed the Hippocratic Oath? Just a few years ago, doctors in this country still gave the Hippocratic Oath to do no harm. They've gotten rid of that. Have they gotten rid of that in Australia?
Well, I mean, the Hippocratic Oath is an oath which is designed to suit the prevailing cultural environment. I mean, it also says in its original form that women shouldn't practice medicine and that doctors shouldn't cut the skin. So, I mean, in a sense, the Hippocratic Oath is an oath that's changed, and because of that, in Australia, doctors don't take such an oath because it, as I said, it's just used to suit certain interests.
Okay, we got a break. I've got some other questions for you, Dr. Nietzsche. Can you stay with us?
Yes, I can.
Okay, we'll be right back in 4 minutes, all right? We'll put you on hold, and we'll come back to him, and maybe you want to call in and talk to the doctor. Maybe you've got a question or a comment for him. Tell the folks answering the phone if that's the subject you want to discuss. That's the only questions we're taking. 1-800-259-9231, Infowars.com. I got it. All right, folks, we're talking to Dr. Philip Nietzsche, and he's got his assisted suicide machine that was confiscated by the Australian government when he flew out to San Diego last week, and he gave his talk at the conference this weekend, over the weekend. Dr. Nietzsche, I don't think it's progressive and loving and compassionate to have the government, to have doctors involved in suicide. Certainly people should be given whatever type of painkillers they need. But I see the government moving. I don't know if you're aware of the cases. Have you ever heard of Wesley Smith and the articles he's written for the Wall Street Journal about how they're already got these bioethics boards where they're not going to give people care if they don't think there's, that their quality of life's good enough to try to take care of them? It's this whole movement I'm concerned about. Where do you see yourself? How would you define the work you do?
Yes, look, I'm certainly well aware of Wesley's contribution to the debate, and disappointing it is too. But nevertheless, I see that it's a caring and compassionate thing to give people options and to give people choice. And if you don't give people options and you don't give them choice, you see the sorts of things that are happening in your society and ours right now. The commonest way the over 75 end their lives in Australia now is by hanging. A grim and grotesque death, and to do nothing is to leave that situation in place. When you actually engage with people, when you actually give them choice and give them options, people, perhaps paradoxically, live longer. When they've got choices and they know that they can have a peaceful death in the face of severe suffering, they're more inclined to let the disease process take its place. If you deny them that choice and tell them that all that they will get given is better and better pain relief, when pain is often not the issue, then you find that people do desperate things. Desperate people.
Well, I saw in the reports of a lot of the people that Kevorkian killed and others, and these are confirmed reports, some of them weren't even physically ill. They were just nutcases. And, I mean, what about killing people that are mentally ill? I mean, if somebody shows up and says, I'm dying, I'm in pain, kill me, and you know, you sell them the machine. I mean, this is a...
Well, we don't sell the machines. People join our organization, and as members of our organization, when they've been members for quite a while, over a year in fact, and when they've attended workshops, then they might get access to such devices and such machines, but it's not as though they're available on the street corner. We say basically that people that are suffering from psychiatric illness and what have you that you've just indicated are not people who are going to get access to these things, but I mean... Look, we're doing what we can in the light of no decent legislation. There's no indication that politicians of our country, or for that matter your country, are planning to introduce progressive legislation such as we saw in the Northern Territory and such as you now have in Oregon. And if that were the case, no one would be running around developing such machines. It's in the light of politicians refusing to take on this issue that we see these developments.
Well, Denver, Colorado hospitals said a few months ago that they're not going to defibrillate people even though their brains are still alive. I mean, that's scary. I'm worried about the bioethics move that supports the kind of stuff you're doing, Dr. Nietzsche. I'm worried about states, you know, in a kind of Soylent Green type mode. I mean, some people in some of the Scandinavian nations are now wearing little toe rings that say, don't kill me, and carrying cards in the backs of their pockets that say that, where the state's moving in to force this on people. In fact, you say you're aware of Wesley Smith. I mean, he names the names of people that have been begging for water, begging for food, who've been paralyzed from the neck down, who've been denied it. Are you aware of those cases?
Okay, well, look, I'm well aware of Wesley's misinformation. He does this in a global scale. We occasionally are afflicted by the visits of Wesley in Australia, and he has a profession and a business out of pushing this sort of misinformation. Now,
wait a minute. He names the names of hospitals. Hold on, doctor. He names the names of hospitals. Doctors, what happened? I guarantee you the Wall Street Journal would not let him write that and name doctors and name people if it wasn't true. You would get sued so big it would be insane.
Well, look, do you want my opinion or do you want to interview yourself?
I'm trying
to answer your question.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I'm saying that we can equally name hospitals, we can equally name doctors, and we can equally name patients where the converse has taken place, and we do this. So it's very well. I'm sure there are examples on both sides of this fence. And quoting of examples is not what we need to do. What we need to do is to look at the theory, to look at the principles behind that practice, and say, do we want choice or don't we want choice? Do you want the choice when your suffering is so great? Do you want the choice to be able to end it or not? Now you can answer that question to me. Do you want that choice or don't you?
Well, I know that my grandfathers didn't take that way out, and I know that other members of my family didn't, and one of my grandfathers...
Would you condemn them if they did?
Well, people just didn't do this in the past.
Well, they do it now, and do we condemn them is the question.
Well, my point is that the government worldwide, and you can say that's not true, I've seen the evidence that the government's pushing where they decide. You know, it's like China. Well, it's a woman's choice to have an abortion. Yeah, but the government comes in and does it. I'm talking about this whole eugenics move. Doctor,
well,
we've got some callers here for you, and I want to give out your website or other information. Can you stay with us about 10 more minutes?
Of course I can.
Okay, thank you. We'll be right back. We'll take calls and then fire out the doctor's website. We appreciate him coming on the show and defending his ideas. 800-259-9231. Your call's coming up.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Jones here, back live, and we're talking to Dr. Philip Nietzsche from Australia, who's here in the United States in San Diego. He just spoke to the National Hemlock Society. We have a lot of callers here that would like to speak to you, Dr. Nietzsche. Any other points you'd like to make before we go to these calls, your website or information along those lines? Dr. Nietzsche, are you there?
Yes, hello. Yes, so we can get straight into the calls if you like.
Okay, does your organization have a website?
Yes, it's just euthanasia.net, www.euthanasia.net.
Euthanasia.net, okay, let's take some calls here. Let's talk to Alice in Oklahoma. You're on the air with Dr. Nietzsche. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
Yes, you've already answered one question. You don't sell them at the local department stores.
No.
The other thing that I have, I've had in the past experience to want to die myself, but then turn around the next day and was glad I wasn't dead. And then the question that I really have is, have you investigated the insurance, the life insurance? Most of these policies won't pay for suicide.
Yes, I'm not totally familiar with the situation in the U.S. In Australia, once the 13-month period is up, life insurance does pay out on cases of insurance, and that's certainly the case in the U.K. too. So, look, I couldn't comment on the situation in America. My understanding was, though, that suicide is certainly no preclusion to life insurance after the period of 13 months, which is the normal time.
Does that answer your questions, Alice?
Oh, yeah, that answers my question.
What do you think of this whole move towards euthanasia?
I think, just like you said, that's just another push for our government to put it into law.
But Mr. Nietzsche would say that governments are resisting this. I don't agree with the bioethics standards they're pushing to get adopted. I don't agree. I mean, I don't know about Australia, but here in the U.S., I've actually seen quite a push by a large camp in and out of government for this. There's certainly another large camp that is against it. Thanks for the call, Alice. Any comments to what I just stated there, Doctor?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you've got it in Oregon. You've seen citizen-initiated referendum go down in three or four other states now, most recently in Maine. So I can't see that there's exactly a great wave of enthusiasm on the part of various state legislatures.
All right, let's take another call. Let's talk to Carol in Colorado. Carol, you're on the air with Dr. Nietzsche. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hello.
I just wanted to comment that I want a choice. My dad happened to be progressive in emphysema, and they took him off water and food and gave him painkillers, and he was gone in 3 days. And it was painful to watch for those 3 days. He would have rather had a choice. My uncle in California had cancer of the spine. It deteriorated so bad, and he was in so much pain, there was no pain medication available for him. Kept trying to go in, trying to get the doctors to do something. He ended up shooting his head off because there was no other way for him to end his suffering. So I just want to let you know that I do want the choice. I don't want a government to force it on me, but I do want the choice. If I were in that situation, I don't want to have to hold a gun to my head and leave that for my family.
Yes, I think, look, Carol, that's exactly my position. It summed up exactly in the way that I hope to have been able to sum it up, too, that people want choice. They're not wanting it pushed upon them, but they don't necessarily want things shoved down their throat, but they do want that option.
Exactly. And to tell you the truth, it was painful to sit with my dad for 3 days. It was better, I suppose, than sitting at home with him and watching him go through something, because they did give him quite a few doses of morphine. But he would have rather had the choice. He knew it was time for him to go. His body just wasn't shutting down, but he was tired and he was ready to go.
Yes,
and I want that choice when I'm that tired.
Yes, me too.
So thank you very much.
All right, Carol, thanks for the call. And this is a debate that has to happen, folks, because it's going on worldwide. And I'm here to tell you, government, especially in Northern Europe, is enthusiastically behind it. And people are there having to carry cards around their wallets saying, don't kill me.
Can I comment on that point? I mean, this is one of these stories which is taken off and swept and publicized by people like Wesley Smith. that there are people carrying cards. Yeah, there are some people carrying cards, but there's a whole lot more people carrying cards saying, I want choice. And it's true that in Holland and in Belgium they have that choice, but they don't have it in France or in Germany. They don't have it in England. So it's not exactly as if it's a, you know, a groundswell again of change happening over there.
Well, Doctor, I've got a bunch of callers here, and I just want to take three more, John, Rose, and Scott, and then we'll let you go. And I appreciate all the time and
thank
your
you.
Websites. euthanasia.net, but stay right there. We've got three more calls for you.
Thanks.
But I want to bring a point up to you. I was shocked whenever I mentioned what Wesley Smith and others were saying, and you said, well, that's, you know, his opinion or what he's saying or disinformation or, you know, whatever. I said, no, wait a minute. The Wall Street Journal isn't going to let him name doctors, name hospitals, name names of people, because I'm in radio. I can't get up here and say something that, you know, is blatantly not true, because we'll get sued. You know, I have to be careful. And Wesley Smith has documented what he has to say meticulously, and it's been in major papers around the country. They don't just let him write this. And then you said, well, I think it's bad, you know, for him to show examples. We need to talk about
the theory. I didn't say that. I didn't say there was anything bad of him showing examples, and I don't even dispute his examples. What I'm saying is that there are equal examples of the converse, where people are being prolonged, they're having their lives extended when they don't want it, they're being forced not to have options, they're being told that they can't have the drugs they want to end their life. Now, we can quote the doctors, we can quote the patients, and we can quote the hospitals. Nothing wrong with Wesley doing that, but let's be fair about this and say that this is not the answer, simply to quote one side.
Now, wait a minute. Now, this show's going out nationwide. Millions of people heard what you said 15 minutes ago, and I'm not trying to pick a fight with you, Dr. Philip Nietzsche. I'm trying to understand. Did I mishear you then? Because you said, I said he gives all these examples, they wouldn't let him do this because of liability, if these examples were not accurate and true and had been checked out by the newspapers. And you said, well, you know, I don't think, you know, we should give examples. I think it's bad what he's doing. We need to look at the theory. Now, that's almost an exact quote, because I've got a good memory here, and it was just 15 minutes ago. Are you saying you didn't see that, or explain to me what you're saying?
Look here. I'm not going to go down that track, and I'm not going to get sucked into that sort of argument. I'm saying to you that examples are important, but they're not the end of the story. The theory is what it's all about, and examples are as many as people want to produce, and we can give just the same number of examples. This is a red herring.
No, I was saying this guy's got his evidence. You had impugned what Wesley Smith was saying, Doctor, and I'm being very polite with you, and I was trying to find out exactly what you're saying. I was not coming at this from a distractionary red herring level. Let's take these final calls. John in Texas, you're on the air with Dr. Nietzsche. Go ahead, John. Welcome. Or John in Tennessee. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's me. My mother-in-law apparently euthanized herself about 10 years ago when she was at a hospice for AIDS and cancer. Now we find out AIDS is a Pentagon bioweapon and that cancer cures are censored from people, apparently in a genocide program. I'd like to add that my mother-in-law was a nurse. Got AIDS in a transfusion during heart surgery. What's your comment on that?
Look, I'm not too sure of the issue, John. You're saying that she had AIDS from transfusion, and then she got some form of treatment which ended her life that she didn't want. Is that what you're saying?
That's what we suspect. She was at a hospice. She was homeless. She couldn't work in the hospital as a nurse anymore when she got AIDS, and she was. The AZT was so devastating, it was worse than the disease.
Yes. If that happened, it's
and she died good. in an easy chair. They found her 3 days, her daughter found her 3 days later, sitting in an easy chair with a cigarette burned through her hand and holding family pictures. So we suspect, but we don't know, that it was a euthanasia, probably just took some pills.
Yeah, look, if that happened in the way you describe, of course it's a disgrace, and obviously it's something that no one would condone.
Well, how do you feel about all the cures for cancer that are censored and the fact that the government's pumping out these genocide programs with all their medical experiments?
Well, I don't see much evidence that they're pumping out the enthusiasm towards helping people, giving people the choices about ending their life. But, I mean, obviously there are better cancer treatments available now, and there are better treatments for HIV and maybe AIDS, and maybe your mother-in-law would have benefited had she stayed alive and long enough to develop or to experience some of these better treatments. So,
well, we know the mycoplasma, that's the main symptom of AIDS, is a Pentagon bioweapon. And the Gulf War illness that all the troops in Desert Storm 1 got is a genetically spliced with the AIDS virus to make the bacteria more deadly.
Yes, well, I can't comment on that.
Well, I appreciate the call, John.
Yeah, thanks.
And what John's saying is accurate. We've been in the mainstream news quietly in the back of the paper. Rose in South Carolina and then Scott, two final callers for Dr. Nietzsche. Go ahead, Rose. You're on the air. From South Carolina. Rose, go ahead. All right, did we lose Rose?
No, here I am.
Okay, good to get you on. Go
I
ahead.
I was going to say that insurance companies would probably go along with this because if you had a protracted disease that lasted for a long time, the insurance company would probably pay off or pay somebody to give you euthanasia to keep from having to put out all your medical bills. But I want to ask the doctor, does he believe in the Lord Jesus Christ?
Yes, look, it's a simple question, Rose. No, it's a fair enough one. No, I don't. I have to confess, I'm an atheist.
Well, I tell you, it's a shame and disgrace with a doctor having the ability to cure people that you would go the way you're going and play God within yourself.
Well, I don't see it as playing God, giving people choice.
Well, that God gives life and God takes life, and I don't think people, if the mind-numbed robots running around here, that people can brainwash so easily. Thank you, Alex.
All right.
Look, that's a very valid position, Rose, and I don't argue with you. I just have a different one.
Well, Dr. Nietzsche, look, what about this euthanasia being institutionalized for the general public, with the elites getting access to the real developments in science? There's a lot of evidence showing that they're suppressing some of the real life extension technologies.
Yes.
And then kind of having like a Logan's Run type society. Couldn't this put a damper on newer medical developments by making a large area of the market of healthcare becoming euthanasia?
Yeah, look, it's a worry. I mean, I can see the line you're putting here, and I think we have to be pretty aware of it. I mean, elites in society that get access to the best new treatments and the rest who don't is a real concern. I mean, I suppose I think that what we've got right now is that the elites in society get access to the drugs that can give them a peaceful death. I mean, I can get them because I'm part of an elite, and you might be able to get them, but most people out there can't go out and get the best drug to give you a peaceful death because they're not part of that elite. The good thing about legislation such as we see in countries like Holland is that it broadens it out for the whole community to have choice, and so it's an equitable and just change that we could benefit from.
But, I mean, you admit some of them have the cards in their back pocket saying, don't kill me. If everything's so perfect, why would they have those cards in their back pocket?
Well, look, yes, of course some people have got those cards, but I said there's an awful lot of people that have got cards in their pocket saying, I want choice. I mean, you can't just drag out a small example and say that proves anything.
Well, I mean, we've had a 60-minute special about 5 years ago in this country where they admit that hospitals could revive you, you're still alive, but they want your organs, so oops, you don't get the care. It's a very dangerous, slippery slope, doctor.
Well, I mean, that's your position there, but I mean, it's not my position, and all I can tell you in this interview is that's not what I think.
All right, one final call. Scott in Florida, you're on the air with the Dr. Philip Nietzsche from Australia here in the United States right now.
How you doing, Dr. Nietzsche?
Hello, Alex. Scott.
I'm for a choice to have a right to die because I've seen other people in a lot of pain. And one thing that scares me about this is before Clinton was elected, him and his wife were trying to push socialized medicine, which I believe one day will come about with this new surgeon they have in the House majority talking now. I mean, I see the medical horizon on the road. What I'm scared of is to save money that they're going to put us to sleep without a choice. If you have your organs to give away, they're just going to let you go.
Well, I mean, the Denver Post already reported that. 6 area hospitals, and we're on right now in Denver. You read this, folks, there in Colorado. Will not defibrillate you now. Your brain's still alive. I mean, most people I know have really bad heart attacks. Their heart stops. They get them started. They live another 25 years. This is dangerous. And just quietly, while the government says they're against euthanasia, they're really setting it up through the bioethics boards. How do you respond to that, Dr. Nietzsche?
Well, look, this is an assertion, and I don't see evidence of that. So, I mean, it's a... it's your particular position. I find quite the contrary. I find that it's there's no great groundswell towards this. We find we have to battle to get the most basic human choices and human rights established in medical environments. People simply don't have that choice. There's no enthusiasm to give them that choice, certainly not in a legal sense. People get it usually through the back door, a little bit like abortion was 25 years ago in our country, where you didn't get an abortion unless you were very wealthy or very well connected. Now, of course, in our country, at least, abortion is available to all if they want it. And that's a choice, and we are happy about that.
Well, abortion is murder.
Well, we'll see. This is a position that you take. It's not my position.
And now, well, yeah, but that's a whole moral relativist view. Look, abortion is killing a human life, and that is a human, and that is developing, and it is destroying our society. And look, communist China does it, and so do we. It's wrong.
Well, again, you're making that position. It's not my position. I can only say to you that I don't agree with you.
All right. Well,
I'd make one other comment.
Sure.
People try to commit suicide every day. What happens to them? They don't prosecute them. It's against the law in those countries, so you take it from there. Where is the mine?
All right. Thanks for the call.
All right.
From Florida, sir. Okay. Well, Dr. Nietzsche, that which doesn't kill us only makes us stronger, huh?
Yes, that's exactly right.
That which kills us makes us stronger, I guess.
Well, that's a variation, but there you go.
Okay, take care, and thanks for joining us, and I hope you change your mind, because I think that you're clouded, and I think you're blinded here. See you later. Oh, boy. I mean, there's no point screaming at that guy. You know, the Bible says murder's wrong. The Bible says coveting your neighbor's wife is wrong. The Bible says stealing's wrong, and the Bible says suicide is wrong. And I think God knows a little bit better than we do. And I found that the code that the Bible gives us to live our lives creates powerful, dynamic, happy societies. And now I may be in a position someday with bone cancer and incredible pain like my father's father, and lung cancer and everything else. But my grandfather didn't want to die. He wanted to spend those final hours with his family. I was there when he died, when I was 5 years old. And that was an incredible experience. And it's an important part of growing. And I know this. I'm not going to commit suicide. I will never, never commit suicide, no matter how much pain I'm in. And I've been in a lot of pain before, folks. I've had compound fractures and, you know, stuff like that. And I didn't want to commit suicide. I wanted to live that much stronger. Every minute of precious life. We'll be right back.